This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Tim Luss. Tim is CEO, National Sorghum Producers. All right, first, let's talk Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA, on winter wheat concerns.
And we did see some exposure as you move north of the storm's footprint, mainly from Nebraska northwestward into parts of Montana. Not much snow, if any, on the ground in some of those winter wheat production areas. We have seen multiple days of sub-zero temperatures in portions of that region. That is an area we'll have to watch moving into spring for areas that may have experienced winter kill. And sometimes that winter kill can be exacerbated by already existing drought-related problems. So we'll keep an eye. Montana to Nebraska for any potential for winter kill. Any assessment of that will take several weeks, if not a few months, until we know for sure how that crop turned out.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today we're joined by Tim Luss. Tim is CEO, National Sorghum Producers. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right. Again, Tim, celebrating, I'm trying to remember how many years with, of course, NSP is one thing, but the National Grain Sorghum before that, how long have you been with the association?
I don't remember, Tony. 32 years, I believe.
Well, all I know is that over 32 years, you've had the opportunity to see a lot of different things. I was going through some old notes, and I believe it dates back to 2018. I'll check my notes here. Yeah, April 17th of 2018, I wrote a story about something that happened with China that really affected the sorghum industry. It seems like that was a million years ago, but do we still have some of the ramifications from what started that trade war?
Well, certainly when you look back at 2025 really up until, you know, mid-November, we had kind of had a similar situation where we had just seen no sales to China. And then the last 60 days, been quite impressive. Obviously today announced of a flash sale of five boats, 302,000 metric tons. You know, last week we had nine boats that were sold, and you know, when we look at the last 60 days, we've had 3 million metric tons of exports announced in the last 60 days. So certainly see a very strong pull. Two recent sales last week and this week are unknown, but certainly assume that those are China sales. They became a very strong buyer again recently.
Okay. And my numbers, I hope I'm close here. If you convert that over to bushels, somewhere around 12 million bushels. So when we talk about this 2025 crop, we have plenty of supply, do we not?
We do. Had a really good crop, increase in acres, increase in harvested acres. And for us, about a 27% bigger crop than a year ago. And so certainly have bushels, have very strong demand from our domestic ethanol industry as well. And pull there, but no, certainly still have a lot of bushels, and so we need to be able to see it to move to markets, and excited that it is.
So I know it may sound a little too soon to be jumping into 2026 and the 2026 growing season, but I bet a lot of those decisions, if they haven't been made, will be made very soon. Any thoughts as we start rolling into 2026 for the U.S. sorghum industry?
Well, I think that we needed the export sales. We've needed the last 2 weeks. We've needed to be able to show that we're moving large quantities of sorghum and moving it because certainly there were concerns there. You know, I think the good thing about sorghum is while there are a lot of decisions made early, you know, switching back and forth between summer crops, you have a little bit more time to do that. And so I think, you know, we need to see the market signals, and we need to see the price increases and basis firm up here on sorghum. But certainly this is a very good start to moving us back to a more healthy position.
We're talking with Tim Lust, CEO, National Sorghum Producers. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Tim Lust, CEO, National Sorghum Producers. All right, Tim, we've had a good crop in 2025, but is there any concern as we continue to grow about growing competition around the globe?
You know, we've competed with Australia and Argentina for a number of years in the export markets. And so, you know, that's something that's pretty consistent. We kind of know what that looks like. Obviously, the big unknown for everybody is Brazil. You know, we have seen very small amounts of sorghum come out of Brazil. But certainly there's talk, and certainly we understand what's happened with all of the other commodities that you just mentioned in terms of that. So, you know, that's the future competition. That's the one that they'll, you know, people will be looking at over the next several years to see what that really looks like or means.
The cost, the value of the crop, what we see in the market price is below the cost of production. Let me spit that out there. That's been a challenge, obviously, for producers of sorghum. Will the bridge payments help out? What are your thoughts on that?
They will. You know, in our case, $48.11 an acre on sorghum. And, you know, I think the other side of that is a mechanism and a process where hopefully they do get it out the door here in the next 40 days and are able to get it to farmers to really bridge. I mean, we've got farmers in South Texas that are planting in less than 40 days. So from our standpoint, you know, real necessity, not only for the dollars, but to get them out quickly. You know, in a perfect world, you do things a little bit different, but it's never quite a perfect world. Certainly, continued discussions about what else may come there or what else may look like. But certainly bridge payments were something that needed to get announced when they did, and they need to get cash flow into the country here over the next 40 days. And that will be very important for our growers.
All right, Tim, I've driven the bus around. It's been kind of a rough road as I ask questions here. So I'm going to step back and say, looking out, what else do you see on the horizon? What's in front of us through the windshield? What do we need to keep an eye on as far as in the periphery as well? Help me out here.
Well, unfortunately, we're back talking about E15 once again. So another colossal missed opportunity to support an American first domestic industry that's adding value. And so, very frustrated about that situation. By the same token, now that there's a study committee, now that there's a process, we just jump back in again. We keep pushing, we keep fighting, We're not going to quit. We're not going to go away, and we'll get E15 done. But it has certainly been one of the most frustrating issues of my career in terms of all of the roadblocks and challenges and the things and the number of times where it is appeared that it was a done deal, not to make it across the finish line. So that will be our big focus, is continuing to push on E15.
Great to see you, Tim. If we want to keep up with the national sorghum producers, can we do that online?
Sorghumgrowers.com. Get you everything you need.
And don't forget, coming up, Commodity Classic as well. Sorghum, a big part of that. Tim Lust is the CEO of the National Sorghum Producers and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Chad Hart is an ag economist, Iowa State.
So when you put the increase in acreage combined with the increase in yield there together, what you have is an even larger corn production. And that's definitely what we saw here, as USDA added nearly 270 million bushels to the production total, which brought it up just over 17 billion bushels. So this is by far the biggest crop we've ever produced. Previous record is actually on this table as well. Back in 2023, 15.34 billion bushels had been our record. Now we've blown that record completely out of the water. So we have tremendous amounts of corn to utilize here, and that's why I'm really concentrating on how is that usage shaping up. Well, as we look down towards the gray box here on this table, that's where you can see the usage categories here. What we can say there is that while we've had some great, in fact, record crops over the past few years, we've also seen usage ramping up as well. In fact, we're at record levels on corn usage today. As we look at the changes USDA made in these numbers compared to previous estimates, what they ended up doing was saying that increase in production will be matched by an increase in the feed and residual demand. In this case, they added 100 million bushels to that. I'm going to argue, I think most of that growth is not in the feed category, because when we look at feed demand, it's looking fairly stable. Usually residual means harvest losses, and with a massive crop like we've got here, it does make sense that we would see additional losses of that crop as we move it through the marketing chain. And so I think that's what's reflecting that number. But the other big deal here to look at, just the strength you're seeing in corn usage, where we've got feed and residual above 6 billion bushels, where we've got ethanol at 5.6 billion, a very, very strong number. In fact, just in the past couple of weeks, the ethanol industry set a record in terms of ethanol production on a weekly basis. You look down at the food, seed, and other, that continues to be a solid 1.3 to 1.4 billion bushels of corn each year. And then the export line. And I would argue that's the line that I was most intrigued to watch. And what we see here is that the run that we're on right now, which is an incredibly good run as far as using up corn, we are selling more to the rest of the world, that continues on here. That we set a record back off the 2024 crop of over 2.8 billion bushels, and that so far this year, we're on a pace to go beyond that, up to 3.2 billion bushels. But when you add up all that demand, what you get is usage now well over 16 billion bushels. Again, uncharted territory in terms of usage there. So not only do we have record supplies, we've got record usage. problem for the market, though, is those record supplies are beating that record usage.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
How do USDA Rural Development Commercial Guaranteed Loans benefit community projects and other local investments? One way to find out is the latest addition to RD's Rural Data Gateway online dashboard.
The Lender Lens is providing a perspective to our customers of the lenders we work with. What we've made available to the public is our commercial guaranteed loan portfolio.
Rural Development's Acting Chief Information Officer Jim Barnum says, put another way, a look at the lenders RD works with in these specific loan products.
A community, whether it's a local bank or a small business owner, if he's looking to finance his business and he goes to his local bank, he knows that there is an opportunity to also work with USDA to help back that loan, lower that risk for that local bank so we can actually have success and he can build his business.
The Lender's Lens and Rural Data Gateway are located online at www.rd.usda.gov. Go to the About RD tab on the homepage, then click the link to Rural Data Gateway. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.